You are listening to The Ron Van Dam Show. That's one part blah, 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 one part ha, 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 and just a smidgen of ta-da!
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's The Ron Van Dam Show.
Hey, thanks for showing up.
Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Hey, welcome to the program. It is the Ron Van Dam Show. I am the person to whom they refer to in the title of the damn thing. It's a pleasure to be with you. Sit back, relax. I will entertain you for the next 30 minutes, and then I won't. All right. That's fine. Okay, we're all set to excuse me, you in the front row? Yeah, don't spread your legs like that. It bothers me. I cannot continue until you... Okay, much better. Much better. Thank you. That person was in my virtual studio audience. Everything these days is virtual. Have you noticed that? My God, nothing's real anymore. Everything's virtual. People actually talk like that, too. Yes, I went out last night and I virtually stayed out till 4 o'clock. You didn't stay out till 4, you virtually did it. You went home at 10, but virtually you were out till 4. I don't understand what you mean by virtually. I don't understand the difference between reality and virtual reality. Well, this is my reality and this is my, I don't know. Maybe it's reality, it's virtual. I don't know. Shut up. Just shut up with the virtual stuff. I was placed in the wrong generation as far as this is concerned. I'm not a Generation W or what do you call those things? You know, Generation P. I'm Generation P in the sense that that's why you get up early in the morning three times. But other than that, I don't know what generation I am. Star Trek generation? I don't know. But I was born a little while ago, and I'm paying the price because I don't understand a lot of the stuff that's going on. I just don't. I don't understand. I'm on the internet, and I understand the things that I need to do to be on the internet. But beyond that, when people talk about the various apps and flaps and dapps, I don't know what the hell they're talking about. And I don't want to do everything through. I don't want to pay things through the internet. I want to write out a check and send it in the mail. It worked for me then. What the hell is the problem? I don't want to give out my account number and have things withdrawn from my account virtually and find out about it later. Come on, man. What, are you kidding me? That internet thing is a thing that gets hacked all the time. You get your personal information stolen. That's that internet thing. Why would I? I'll use it for entertainment purposes, but why would I do my business on it? No, I'm sorry. No, I can't. I can't do it. I can't do it. I don't even have a phone book anymore. I grew up with phone books. Yeah, when people are too short and they're sitting at the kitchen table, you whip out a phone book. Now the people, they can't even reach the top of the table without a phone book because they don't make phone books anymore. If I needed a certain service when I was, younger, I would take out the phone book and we opened up the book and we looked for something and then we called them on the telephone. And when the telephone rang, that person picked up the phone and said, "Hello, this is Frank." Wow, that's who I'm calling. Now I'm getting robots and I start screaming at robots. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. I spend more time yelling into the phone going, "Speak to an agent, speak to an agent, speak to an agent." "I'm sorry, I didn't understand that." "Speak to an agent." I'm arguing and yelling at robots. I can't get to a real person unless I've been on hold for 20 minutes speaking to robots. It's awful. It's demeaning. Telemarketers used to call me, "Hello, this is Jose, and I try. This is Bob, and I'm trying to sell. We're with the solar paneling company, and we want to see if you're interested." At least the people would call. but now they're the robots. And they sound like people, but they're not people. They're the robots. They're the automated stuff, the AI people. I have no contact with human beings anymore, which is great socially, but when I got business to take care of, I want a freaking human to take care of me. I want them to hear my compassion and my problems. Do you ever call a company because you had a problem, or your service was down, or you had a complaint, and the robot is trying to sell you stuff? I don't want to buy your stuff. Your stuff doesn't even work. Did you know that you can go on the internet and get most of your problems solved? Yes, I know that. But when I go on the internet, they don't solve anything. I'm speaking to Clara in the bottom right-hand corner of the screen, who's another robot. I can't do it. I can't. If I have a problem, I want a human being to hear me out. That's part of the problem. I wouldn't feel so bad if a human being calmed me down. Now, Ron, we'll take care of your problem. Just tell me what the problem is, and we're going to take care of you right now. That's what I want to hear. Not some freaking robot. Well, I can send you a text with the information about the problem that you think you're having. I don't want a text. I want a person to speak to me and solve the problem. I'm sorry to complain to you, but I'm sure you have your problems too. We all have problems. And that's kind of the theme of today's show. I have an incredible psychologist joining me on the show today in an extended interview. She has written a book about one of her patients that had so many problems that you'd be amazed. It's a really good book, because it also, it's not only from the psychotherapist's position, it's also from the patient's position, and it's interesting the dynamic back and forth. And apparently, they both walked away from this therapy thing session with some great revelations. It's an incredible book. It really is. I have read it, and it's really good. And I read it. I read the book. I didn't have to go on a screen to squint at it and read it. Is there one thing I can do in my life that doesn't involve staring at a screen, a small one at that? Is there anything I can do anymore beyond sitting on my ass and not moving and looking at a screen? Is there anything else? Because they've made it where I don't have to do anything else but sit on my ass and stare at a screen. For everything, for work, for play, for everything. They got an app for everything. It's like, I don't know. I can't go there. I'm just not from these gen. I'm not. It's not working out. We all have problems. We all have conditions, whether you want to accept it or not. We all have something. Either we Our minds are racing, or we're depressed, or we have anxiety, or we're shy, or we're over energetic, or we're dyslexic, or we can't, we have trouble reading, we have trouble focusing. Everybody's got some type of psychological problem. When it interferes with your life, it becomes a concern. I have learned in my travels throughout my life, I have never really met anybody that didn't have any problems whatsoever. And if they said that they didn't, that's a problem. The only people that I've met that seem to be like really okay are cheerleaders, because they're always happy, they're physically flexible, they're attractive, they can do anything they want, they can be anybody they want. What could be better? But then I dated a few cheerleaders back in high school and college, and let me tell you, they are more fucked up than anybody else. Because they're just, it's true. So we all have something going on. Let's admit it. You know, there's a phrase that I'm my own worst enemy. Have you heard that? Yes, I can't do anything right. I just don't have the energy anymore. I'm my own worst enemy. That's not good. If you your own worst enemy, then you got some problems. I would, first of all, if you're on, I would take all the mirrors down in your house. If you're your own worst enemy, you don't want to look in the mirror. Oh, there's my worst enemy again. You're walking down the street, you turn around, oh, no, it's me. I'm my own worst enemy. I'm going to harm myself. I mean, no one, you know, you try to be my enemy. You can't be. I'm my worst one. Now, if you're going to have an enemy, make it somebody else and then stay away from them and then you're good. So I don't understand what the problem is. No, I'm my own worst enemy. Stop saying that. Change it then. Find another enemy that's worse than you are and go with that. All right, I'm my own second worst enemy. Okay, better. We're working up. We're working up toward the goal. That's fine. Someday you'll be your third worst enemy. Then you'll be your own fourth worst enemy, and eventually, maybe you'll get along with yourself, and you can put the mirrors back up. I don't know. I don't know. All right, we're gonna take a short commercial break. When we come back, my guest will be joining us, and I think you'll find that quite a bit entertaining. But first, there's this.
Give the gift that says, I love you. The gift that says, happy birthday. The gift that says, get well soon. The gift that says, you're the reason I went into the priesthood. The gift that says, congratulations on not getting indicted. The gift that says, I want to cover you in warm chocolate pudding. The gift that says, good luck in clown college. The gift that says, thanks for removing my unsightly wart. The gift that says, sorry about giving you food poisoning. The gift that says, I'll see you in hell. The gift that says, remember the good times we had in prison. The gift that says, I want to make sweet love to you on the white sand beaches of Rio while your hot cousin watches. The gift that says, thank you for the kidney. The gift that says, you deserve all the best, but this will have to do. The gift that says, thanks, Jesus. Whatever you want to say, you can say it beautifully with a timeless gift from Phyllis Gorman's House of Macaroni Art on Route 94 just past the Rotary, across from Sweaty Palmer's Adult Emporium.
Dr. Angela Glazer-Bowers joins us now. She is a PhD, and she's a fantastic clinical psychologist, is quite renowned, and has written a book that is just captivating. Thanks for being with us today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's a delightful thing to be here today.
Yes, the book is called Overcoming, and the title alone makes everybody want to read it because we all have something to overcome. What inspired you to write this book? It's a little bit different than other manuals of psychology.
I hope it's a little bit different. What inspired me to write the book is that this woman that I saw in therapy for a number of years was so incredibly inspiring to me as a therapist that I really thought that her story needed to be told. And so I wrote this book because I thought that her story would help others. There's so many themes in the book, Overcoming, in terms of the issues that she had to deal with, that almost anybody who reads this book is going to find something that they're going to relate to.
Yeah, you've been doing this for a triple decade, so this, and this stood out to you. This must be quite something. Did you have to get her permission to do this? Or
absolutely, yes. I wasn't sure when I was meeting with her that her story would ever turn into a book. But as the years went by and I reflected more and more on this case, I realized that this case represented so many themes that a book would be a terrific way to perhaps help many other people. And so I asked her if she would be okay with my writing the story, mm-hmm. obviously keeping her identity completely right. anonymous. And she said yes. And so I wrote the book during COVID, and it was a very quick, really, it came out of me very quickly because I think I'd been sort of in my mind writing the book probably for 10 years or so. Mm. And then it just really only took a few months. But then it took about a year for her to actually sign off completely because she needed to read the book before she completely said okay. And that was much harder. So I waited for about a year. And then she finally was able to say, yes, go ahead. And I've had her blessing ever since. So she's very interested in knowing how the book's doing and how things are going for me in terms of sharing this book with others. So it's all worked out really well.
I guess there's a release in the patient's point of view about exposing their story, because under the guise that it's helping other people, then you get a good feeling. And that's, I mean, a lot of celebrities do that with their condition.
I think you're right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so too. I think it makes her story not only meaningful to her, but knowing that what she went through and how she was able to heal and recover could potentially inspire others and teach others. I think you're right. I think that's been very meaningful to her too.
You know, it's very interesting with the pandemic and then political things and everything that's going on and the world at conflict. I don't know of one human being that doesn't need to talk about something. That doesn't have some phase of anxiety or confusion. It's phenomenal in a sense.
It is. And I think what's so hard too these days is that it's hard to know which sources to believe. Mm-hmm. What, you know, there's so much confusion about what are factual things, what isn't.
Yes.
And so it creates a whole nother layer of anxiety just trying to figure out what's going on.
It does. This must be a very interesting time for you in your career.
I think it's an interesting time for all of us, don't you?
Well, I certainly do. Yes, no question
about
it.
And you and your career as well, you know, talking to many people about all these things, I'm sure it's added a layer of complication to your career.
There's no question about it. It's a layer of anxiety because I know too much, and that's that's not easy for the brain to accept because I'm a human being. So yeah, that is difficult. This story that you're relaying to everybody, this particular patient had so many layers. You say so many different aspects to it.
Well, what happened was when she first came to me, she came very reluctantly. She was essentially forced to come into therapy by her boss, who essentially said, if you don't get therapy, you're out of a job. Mm. So it was a tough start, and I don't want to give it away because that's it's part of what makes the beginning of this book so interesting. But I can tell you that what I faced with her in her first session was probably something that most therapists will never have gone through.
Wow. Let me go off track for just a second because I've been trying to figure this out for a long time. How does a person like yourself, a clinical psychologist, put up with hearing other people's stories and not have those stories affect you in the sense that I'm hearing all these horrific situations that I must get involved in? How do you handle that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't think that I can say that I'm not impacted by them. As the years go on, I think that just like anybody who has to work with people in very vulnerable situations where there's trauma and a lot of heartache, there's a certain sense of strength that we develop in being able to hear the heartbreaking stories that we do.
Yeah.
I know when I first became a therapist, that's all I could think about were the stories my clients were telling me and how I could possibly help them. So, but as the years go on, and I don't want to really call it a hardening because it's not feeling hard, but maybe a getting used to, you know, listening to traumatic stories.
Yeah.
And so, but I do, I think about my clients when I'm not in the office and I do have a lot of compassion. And I think it takes a certain type of person to become a therapist because to your point, we do listen to so many incredibly heartbreaking stories that are often what might be considered sort of secondary trauma for those of us that listen to the stories. And so it takes a lot of getting used to, but over the years, I think it's just something that has become so routine for me. And now having been a therapist for so long, I can probably say, I don't know that there's anything I haven't heard.
People will
come in and say, oh, you know, you've probably never heard this before. And I think to myself, no, I actually have, you know, because there's so many, after so many years, I've heard thousands, literally thousands of stories of people's heartache and suffering and also recovery. Yeah. And so that's the good news, right, is that there are definitely, no matter how hard the story is or how much suffering a person has gone through, there are ways to come out of it on the other side and thrive. And, of course, that's what the theme of this book is.
Yes. The term behavior modification, is that kind of the underlying theme of clinical psychology? In other words, we're trying to modify one's behavior, not necessarily to change it or rid one of it, but to modify it so you can live with it.
Well, behavior modification is a clinical term that's several decades old now. Mm-hmm. And I would say that what we're doing these days is not only looking at a person's behavior, but perhaps what's underneath the behavior is how they think about their lives. Yeah. Because as you know, two people can experience the same event and one person will come away from it really unscathed or perhaps really not fazed that much, and the other person will be very much traumatized by it. So then one has to say, well, what is the difference between the two and how are they processing the event and what are their thoughts about it?
Yeah.
So I would say for myself, I'm primarily what would be called a cognitive behavioral therapist, where I really help work with the person's thoughts about what's going on in their life and what has happened to them in the past, so that as they change their thinking, they change their behaviors as well.
Wow. When we come across, I'll get to the book in a minute because you're too fascinating.
Thank you.
When one feels anxiety, and again, I've noticed so many people expressing this now out loud, and they seem more comfortable when they know that, yeah, almost everybody's experiencing this. So, okay, now it's not just me. That's a comfort in itself. But what can one do to just lower their common day anxiety?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great question because so many people are not really good stewards of themselves in terms of what they expose themselves to. So taking break from the news so that they're not watching the news 24/7 would be one, making sure that they're getting enough sleep. Spending time with friends can lower anxiety.
Having time to
do anxiety management practices, whether that's doing some deep breathing every day or going for nice walks or doing a yoga practice, even taking consideration in terms of how they're eating and are they taking in foods that or beverages that might increase anxiety. You know, people think, oh, I only have a couple cups of coffee a day. But if you're already really anxious, then that's probably the last thing you should be doing. So there are many little things that we can do in our lives every day that will help lower our anxiety to a certain extent. And then also realizing what we can and can't control. Those people who have a sense of control over their lives typically feel a little bit better. They don't have as much anxiety. So looking at your life and saying, you know, what are the variables that I can control? And certainly how you spend your time when you're not at work would be a huge variable.
Right. Well, that's a good point. Control the things you can control and don't frustrate yourself with things that you can't. Although when you are a control person and then you lose a little control, that's very foreign to that person.
You're right. Yeah. Well, and then, you know, in the bigger scheme of things, depression is often caused by loss of control.
Yes.
And so again, going to what can I control? Where can I take my mind? You know, if sometimes people, I talk about thought habits, you know, just like we have behavioral habits, how we eat, how we brush our teeth in the morning, when we take a shower, how we get dressed. We also have thought habits. And I think people get in habits of thinking negatively or about anxiety provoking things. So being aware of your thoughts, this kind of ties into the whole mindfulness movement and saying, wait a minute, I'm not going to spend hours or minutes thinking about these negative things that make me anxious. And so deliberately taking your mind to places that are more soothing, whether it's thinking about your pets or thinking about a vacation that you've had or that you're about to have. I mean, there are ways that we can take charge of where we let our minds go. And I think that can impact our anxiety levels as well.
When you delve into somebody's childhood or past and that patient starts to see what might cause their personality conditions at this particular time. Is that helpful to the patient?
Yes. Oh my gosh, yes it is, because so many times people are confused or they have so much judgment.
Uh-huh.
Personal judgment about, you know, why do I behave this way or what's wrong with me? And when they realize that perhaps some of their behaviors stem from the way they were treated as children,
mm-hmm.
it gives them a sense of understanding and relief about it. Now, that doesn't necessarily change things.
Right.
They still need to make an active effort mm-hmm. to do things differently. But having that understanding, I think, leads to wisdom. And so as a therapist, I don't spend a lot of time talking about a person's childhood. I just mm-hmm. want to know enough that I can give them a sense of understanding mm-hmm. and a foundation for mm-hmm. the way in which they think and behave. However, in this particular case, in the book Overcoming,
yep.
that completely changed because her childhood was so incredibly traumatic in so many ways that we actually spent quite a lot of time delving through it and sorting through what happened
yeah.
so she could understand herself and really release some of the pain that she'd been holding for decades.
Well, as you said at the beginning of our conversation, if you had a checklist of all the things that could change somebody, that makes somebody's life difficult, she had most of these clicked off, checked off.
She sure did. I mean, when I look back and think, okay, what were the biggest themes of her life
mm-hmm.
In terms of what caused her to become so incredibly unhappy and dysfunctional? Mm-hmm. She had severe neglect. She had sexual abuse, PTSD, a major depressive disorder. She had substance abuse, abandonment issues, sense of unworthiness. I mean, that's why I thought that this story needed to be told, because there are so many things that she went through that most of us can identify with at least one or more of these things too. So yes, she had certainly a lot of challenges to overcome.
Interesting.
You know, by the way, I just wanted to mention,
mm-hmm.
We were talking about anxiety before.
Yes.
And for people who might be interested, on my website, which is called Art of Transformation, I have several recordings that people can listen to
oh, wow.
to help with anxiety. Years ago, when CDs were still being used in the home, these were CDs. And so what I did was I had my web person take the recordings and put them on the website for people to listen to. So there are breathing techniques, there mm-hmm. are guided imagery, there's a forgiveness recording, there's probably about 7 different recordings
Great.
That people can experience, Great. And they're very, very helpful. And I made them specifically to help people with anxiety.
Wow. What was that website again?
It's called artoftransformation.com.
Great. I'm writing it down.
Yes, I hope you do. My favorite recording on there is called The Body Scan,
mm-hmm.
and it's about a 28-minute recording, and I walk people sort of through the body in terms of their what they feel and mm-hmm. gratitude about their body, the different chakras, and
mm-hmm.
I've had a lot of good feedback on it,
very
and it's
good.
Actually my favorite. It's very, very relaxing.
Very, very good. Well, I'm excited to read the book. I started reading it, but it's fascinating. And
oh, great. I hope you like it.
Yeah, I already do. And it didn't take me too many pages to like it. So that's pretty good. It's captivating.
And, yes, good.
Yeah, and the way that you tell the story is also very involving as opposed to very clinical. So that's
well, you know, the other
helpful.
Thing too that mm-hmm. maybe I'm not sure if you've reached this part of the book yet,
mm-hmm.
but what makes this book unique is that the story is told not only from my perspective, but hers as well.
Yeah.
Because I took her writings. She wrote me letters, mm-hmm. poems, emails, back in those days, faxes. And so I took those things and put them in the book. So
nice.
Her story is told not only from my vantage point as her therapist, but also her vantage point as the client. And so that makes it even more interesting because it's kind of told from two perspectives.
Well, that is the hook of the book, so to speak, and the fact that
it is
different than other books on that subject matter. It's It is from both sides, and it's basically from the patient's side, so we can actually start connecting a little bit better as opposed to, you know, a third-party situation. Which
I know, it gives you a really good glimpse into how she was thinking about not only herself, but even the therapeutic process.
Yeah.
And so I think that made it really unique.
Yeah. No question about it. Well, I could talk to you for hours, but I don't think I'm supposed to. And also, we're supposed to read the book. So,
well, thanks so much for having me. This was really fun today. I enjoyed speaking with you a lot.
It's been a pleasure. So artoftransformation.com, are there any other sites that we can hook to?
Well, I mean, I do have a Dr. Angela Bowers Facebook, but
okay.
I think just the website probably you're going to get much more out of, actually.
Excellent. And the book itself is called Overcoming, and that's available everywhere, I would greatly assume. And
yes, it's available. People can order it from their local bookstores, and then it's on Amazon as well. Mm-hmm. And the Amazon site also has it on Kindle and an audio version for those people who would rather listen to the book versus reading it. It seems like that's been a very popular way these days that people have absorbed books, is that they like the audio. So I actually had it recorded as well.
Well, that actually helps you in traffic with the frustration of traffic. You listen to the book in the car, and that's helpful too. So there you go. Works.
All right.
All right. Thank you so much for your time today. She's Dr. Angela Glaser Bowers, and it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much. Well, that'll do it for me today. I'll be back again the next time a weekday rolls around. But until that time arrives, I wish you peace.